This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. It creeps up on you. Your mind fogs, forgetting things that used to come easily, like where you parked or even your email password. Your head pounds and your body, it starts to change. At night, you find yourself awake in the grips of insomnia and the heat. Dear Lord, the heat. A metamorphosis is upon you. No, we're not talking about werewolves or any other kind of supernatural transformation. We're talking about a different kind of change, menopause. And despite the conversation around it, it doesn't have to be as scary as it sounds. In the next 4 years, about 1 billion people around the world will be postmenopausal. But despite the fact that it's just another part of life, it's shrouded in mystery. Well, today, we cut through the mystery and get real about menopause. Here to guide us through this version of The Talk is Dr. Jen Gunter. She's an OBGYN and author of the book, The Menopause Manifesto, and she joins us from the Bay Area. Dr. Gunter, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Also with us from Durham, North Carolina is Omi Sade Bernie Scott. She's the host of the podcast, Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause. Omi Sade, it's great to have you on.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
And joining us from New York is Jessica Gross. She's parenting columnist for The New York Times. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Dr. Gunter, I just want to start with the terminology, because there are a lot of terms. Menopause, perimenopause, postmenopausal. Let's just start with the definitions we need to understand for this conversation. What is menopause?
Right. So menopause medically is the time after you've had a year without a period. And that goes on then, you know, for the rest of your life. The menopause transition is the time leading up to that. And like puberty, it's an indistinct length of time. Menopause itself is really that day of your last period, but practically no one knows when that is. And most of us use the term menopause to kind of describe the whole experience from the menopause transition onwards, because, you know, there are no hard and fast start and stop dates.
And when we talk about perimenopause, what does that refer to?
Well, perimenopause is a term that some people use for the menopause transition, so that time leading up to menopause. And it also includes that 1 year from the time of your last period until you're that 1 year out. So it's basically interchangeable with the menopause transition.
Explain exactly what's happening in the body during this time. What's going on with our hormones?
So, you know, menopause can be best described, sort of that whole experience, as changes in the brain-ovary connection. There's also obviously other changes in the body as well. But the signaling back and forth between the brain and the ovaries for ovulation is starting to wind down, kind of in the same way it started to wind up when you went through puberty. And that leads to irregular ovulation. It leads to ovulation that might not quite go all the way, so an egg may develop and then it may stop. And the bulk of the estrogen made in our bodies and all of the progesterone comes from the eggs. And so we start to get erratic levels of hormones, or sort of changes in frequency of when the hormones are coming, and also changes in the brain hormones that are communicating back and forth with the ovaries. And over time, this planned change results in a loss of estrogen, or a decrease in estrogen and a decrease in progesterone, because at the end, there are no more eggs capable of ovulation.
Omi Sade, in your podcast, you highlight lots of people's experiences with menopause. You are now on the other side. What was your experience like?
Mm-hmm. I am on the other side. I'm officially 8 years on the other side. my experience, I think very much like what Dr. Gunter was saying, was a spectrum. I clearly was perimenopausal in my late 30s, though it wasn't necessarily as obvious to me until I became pregnant at 40 and I had a miscarriage. And during that period of time, my OBGYN had a much more explicit conversation with me about being perimenopausal. And then I was pregnant again at 41, and I have a 13-year-old. I have actually two sons, 30 and 13. And so my journey with menopause is a spectrum, right? So there's a spectrum of experiences that are very unique to me as a cis hetero Black woman. And I know that there is a spectrum of experiences that other folk will have that aren't like me. And so it's very unique. But I think that the most important thing that was for that I wanted to ground in was my personhood and how I was experiencing it and what kind of support I could receive, not only from my OBGYN, but also from my primary care physician, my therapist, my partner, my friends. It is a full experience. And so there's so many things that go in that are involved with that process for you.
Now, Jessica, earlier this year, you wrote an article in The Times called Why is Perimenopause Still Such a Mystery? And in it, you highlight conversations you had with several women and experts. What got you thinking about this in the first place?
So it's actually my editor's idea. She originally brought it to me as, is perimenopause having a moment? In part because Dr. Gunter's book was coming out. There was another book coming out. There were multiple sort of podcasts, publications, femtech companies, so technology companies that were rising up to address this moment in a woman's life, podcasts, all of these things all culminating together. And she felt it was part of the cultural conversation in a way that it had not been previously, despite the fact that, as you said, billions of women experience it. So I started researching it. And despite the fact that so many folks have been trying to raise awareness and been doing research about this topic for decades, almost to a person, everyone I spoke to said, no one told me it would be like this. And I, as a parenting writer, experienced a similar thing in parenting issues. And no one told me it would be like this. So I think part of it is just you have to experience it to really deeply understand what it's like. But I think the other part of it is that there's still a cultural taboo in talking about women aging, in talking about our periods, in talking about hot flashes. And I think that there is even less sympathy for the sometimes quite debilitating symptoms that many women experience when they are going through this life change. And so it was really interesting for me to talk to experts and learn about the history and talk to people who have been going through it.
Dr. Gunter, why isn't this something we talk about more?
Well, I mean, I think just as was mentioned that, you know, there is a huge taboo about women as they age. I mean, it feels like, you know, when you hit 40, you've sort of been, you know, given your ticket to the sort of the waiting room for death. You know, you're kind of done.
That's really dark. And, sorry.
Well, I mean, that's really how it feels. Yeah. Look at the movies that we see. Look at the ages of the partner differential, right, between action stars and male action stars and female action stars. I mean, so every single image that we look at sort of supports that. And I think also, too, so we have this sort of this huge ageist problem, which is far more, I would say, directed towards women. We still have the remnants of purity culture, right? Talking about the reproductive tract for some reason is harder than talking about your knee or your foot, and it shouldn't be. And so I think that's an extension of this. And I think that also there has been this communication gap between medicine and how we communicate to the public, which is something that I'm trying very hard to work on. So, you know, there has been in the last 20 or 30 years, you know, a lot of research on menopause. And why we're having difficulty getting that to the public is something that we really need to talk about.
Well, we'll talk about it. We'll be back with more in a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. This message comes from Capital One. With the Capital One Venture Card, you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase, every day. and you can use those miles toward travel expenses like flights, hotels, rental cars, and more. Just book and pay for your travel using your Venture card and redeem your miles toward the cost. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Credit approval required. Capital One Bank, USANA.
There are arrowheads in the walls.
I'm Ramtin Arablouei.
I'm Rund Abdelfattah, and we're the hosts of Throughline, NPR's history podcast.
And for our special series this month, The Best of Throughline.
You know, if we carry on as we have been, this is what we might wind up with.
Listen now to the Throughline podcast from NPR.
We're discussing menopause and everything about it. Here's a question we got from Stephanie via email, who asks, have there been studies on how not having children affects menopause? My mom and sister both went through menopause in their mid-40s, but I've never had children, and I'm still dealing with my cycle at almost 50. Evolutionarily, it kind of makes sense, but it's kind that nature hasn't given up on me yet, but I'd really rather be done. Thanks. Dr. Gunter, do we know if that affects menopause at all?
Not really. Not in the sense that people think. So if you have, you know, more children or less children, that's not going to change, you know, your ovulation. However, having some people who are generally more fertile, people who've had children, obviously that's proven fertility. You may have a sort of, so it may be a marker for the functioning of your reproductive tract, right? So the people who've had more children may certainly there's a possibility they could have a, you know, a menopause closer to the typical age, which is around 51. But generally, no, it's not really it's not a good sign or a good marker or predictor.
Well, we hear a lot about hot flashes, but there are other symptoms. Cindy from Texas told us hers.
I went through menopause several years ago, and I have what seems like a funny memory issue. Things will just go out of my head kind of instantly. By the time I log into the computer, I don't remember what I'm getting in there for. And then after just a minute, I remember again. I've asked my doctor, and she said, oh, that's just a loss of estrogen. But it's been that way for a couple of years, doesn't seem to be getting better or worse. Is this anything I should worry about, or is it really just lack of estrogen? Thank you.
Brain fog, Dr. Gunter. That sounds like what Cindy's describing there.
Yeah, so brain fog is a really common symptom. It affects about two-thirds of people going through menopause. And I actually think we should rebrand it and call it a brain reboot, because it's actually not related to low levels of estrogen. It's related most likely to sort of all the complex changes that are happening in the brain. And there's some really fascinating work, actually, that recently just came out of New York from Dr. Lisa Mosconi's group looking at brain imaging. And it's true that definitely some areas of the brain shrink during menopause, and areas that are using sort of sugar, a sign of metabolism, definitely change. But other areas grow and compensate. And so if you think about, you know, there are all kinds of parts of your brain that are there to control ovulation, and you don't need those anymore when you're menopausal. So your brain is actually pruning and removing things that aren't actually needed. And so think about it like getting a new operating system. You know, when you get that message that your phone is going to download the new operating system and you're panicked about that and your phone is going to be glitchy for a few days and you have to maybe redo some of your apps and enter new passwords, that's a little bit like what's going on in your brain. It's kind of a reboot. So there's other things that can cause that too. And so people who have who aren't sleeping well because of hot flashes may have problems with, you know, with cognition, or people who have sleep apnea, other types of things. So it's always important to have a thorough investigation and make sure there aren't other causes. But the other thing I always reassure people is that even with brain fog, on cognitive testing, women still outperform men.
Good to know. Abhishade, in your podcast, when you talk to folks about their experience with menopause, what's the range of symptoms they describe?
All of the symptoms. So literally, we're talking to women-identified people, non-binary people. We're talking to people who experienced menopause in their 40s and their 50s. We're also talking to people who are experiencing menopause in their 20s and their 30s for other reasons. And so they're expressing all of the things. And what they express the most is the need for wayfinding. I think I love this terminology of wayfinding and rebooting. The wayfinding that was available to me as a Gen Xer 42 years ago when my period first started felt really pervasive. There was so much information out there. There were books. We had sex ed. My mom was a nurse. There was all kinds of conversations happening in the house. You know, we all read Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Of course.
I was obsessed with the book. And I also feel like we are now in this place as Gen Xers doing a reboot on the wayfinding from menopause. And so the books that are out there, the conversations that are being started, the podcasts that have started over the last couple of years. And I also recognize that there's still marginalized voices that don't have space to talk about their full experiences. So, you know, Black people, Indigenous people, people of color, people who don't identify as women, but who have uteruses and are experiencing menopause, also need a space for wayfinding to know what's happening and that this is not an end, but a transition.
We also heard from Janice.
I went through menopause early, perhaps when I was 40, because I had had a full hysterectomy at 37. I started on HRT when I was 43. And now that I'm 70, of course, I can't get any kind of HRT. My doctor took me off of my blended HRT last year, and within 3 months, I began to notice a drastic difference in my muscle tone, my skin tone, my sleep patterns, and yet I can get nothing to help me with that. It just seems like once you get over the age of 65, whatever issues you're having that are as a result of no estrogen or progesterone or whatever, you're just stuck.
Dr. Gunter, Janice talks about HRT or hormone replacement therapy. Explain exactly what that is and how it works.
Right. So we should be using the term menopausal hormone therapy, because hormone replacement therapy is actually a really awful misogynistic term, because it implies that your ovaries should be continuing to make estrogen and that the loss of estrogen is a fault, and it's not. Menopause is a planned event. And so if you're having symptoms, you get therapy for those symptoms. And so the menopausal hormone therapy is really the better term to use. And that's using primarily estrogen in the form of estradiol, or there are other formulations as well. Premarin is another one to treat the symptoms of menopause. Now, MHT will only treat some symptoms. So, for example, it's the gold standard for hot flushes. It won't treat brain fog, right? So you have to know what the therapy can treat. We give a progestin, which is either progesterone or progesterone-like hormone, for people who have a uterus to counteract the effect of estrogen. And that's really the basics. And how long you take it will depend on why you're taking it. So some people may only need it for a short time during their menopause transition for symptoms. And once their symptoms go away, if you don't need it, you don't need it. Other people may find that it was a very effective treatment for them for depression that was triggered during the menopause transition, and maybe they don't want to stop it. Other people, like myself, who are at very high risk for osteoporosis, are on it for bone protection. And so there are a variety of different reasons to be on it. And one thing I would like to say is the caller mentioned something called blended hormones, and that sounds to me like these customized compounded hormones, and there's actually no evidence that those are safe, really, and we really do advise against those.
We're discussing menopause with Dr. Jen Gunter, author of the book The Menopause Manifesto, Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause host Omi Sade Bernie Scott, and New York Times parenting columnist Jessica Gross. We're also hearing from you. Michelle emails, they're not hot flashes, they are power surges. We'll be back with more in a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Wyzant, a one-to-one tutoring alternative to online classes where you can learn face-to-face online. Get help with tackling new subjects and career skills, or just catching up. Wyzant lists thousands of personal instructors in over 300 subjects, available for live, individualized lessons with their online learning platform. Head to wyzant.com to find your perfect instructor. Love it, or your first hour is free. Because at Wyzant, we take learning personally.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult.
Let's get back to our conversation on menopause. Carrie tweets this, "My advice, reach out to older women. We are brimming with experience and advice." And Omishade, I see you nodding there. Tap into the tribe, right?
Tap into your tribe. Storytelling is a magnificent wayfinding tool. Right? To be able to sit down with each other, with your peers, with folk who are older than you, with people who are younger than you, to have this conversation, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to actually start this podcast or this community of people, is to do that. Like, how do you share these stories? Because one, oftentimes you might not always trust your doctor for so many reasons, but you will trust the people that you're close to, your intimates, the people who are in your community, the people who look like you, the people who might have shared lived experiences like you. And so I wholeheartedly agree with that comment for the person to reach out to your community, because we have a lot to share. And it's not just about our physical experience with menopause and aging. It's also the cultural changes that we experience in a society that centers youthfulness, whiteness, straightness. So to be able to have these conversations around what's happening to you, it's important to have that community of people you can reach into.
Here's an email we got from Amanda, and I'll say we had lots of questions about this, Dr. Gunter. Please talk about the decrease in libido during menopause and after menopause.
Well, that's a very long and complex subject that if I could answer in one or two sentences, I'd have solved a lot of issues. So, I mean, I think that it's important to understand that yes, libido can change during menopause, but it's also important to recognize that the way libido is framed in our culture is from a very sort of I would say, again, you know, misogynistic point of view that basically, a woman should always be hot and horny for the touch of a man. That's kind of how it's framed in everything. So a lot of times people are coming up against a cultural standard that doesn't fit for the majority of people. The way we talk about libido is all framed from a spontaneous standpoint, but understanding that it can be receptive for most people, actually, that the way we've been talking about libido in our culture is basically doesn't fit the majority of people. It might fit a Hollywood script, but it doesn't fit how most people experience it. And then if people have been with the same person for 20 or 30 years, if they're not sleeping well, if they have vaginal dryness. So I think that you have to look at libido and think, what are all the things that go into it, and what makes a good sex life for each individual person is going to vary. And so if there's pain with sex from menopause, absolutely that should be treated, because that will absolutely affect libido. If you're not sleeping well, then that's going to affect libido. If your partner has been, dismissive of your symptoms, that's going to affect your libido. So I think you have to look at the whole thing. And if you go through all of these things, then sometimes there are some medical treatments specifically for sex drive that can be offered. But in my experience, there's so many other things to look at first.
Mm. I mean, part of what I'm hearing from all of you is that because our experiences are so individual, and those experiences exist within this larger context of what's happening in our lives, socially, in our relationships, in work, that it can be really difficult to maybe get some of the absolute answers that we want. Dr. Gunter, would you say that's accurate? Because it has to be looked at from this more like holistic perspective.
Well, I would say that menopause is the ultimate exercise in holistic medicine, because not only does it affect, every part of your body, but you're grossly impacted by society's sort of ageist view of women. And so if every message that you've heard about your body is negative, then how is that going to affect how you feel? I mean, we've completely erased this whole concept that it was women in menopause that drove evolution. We have this amazing grandmother theory that tells us that we are here in part because of the strength of women in menopause. Like, we need more of those stories.
Explain that a little bit more.
So if you compare humans to other animals. Other animals die when they finish reproduction, and humans keep on living, humans and killer whales. And there is a little bit of data now, apparently, that giraffes may as well. And why is that? Why do chimpanzees die when they stop reproducing and humans keep on living? They're our closest relative in the animal kingdom. And it turns out that having a woman in menopause is useful because she's not running around looking after her own children. She can help with the next generation. She can help with the grandchildren. She can help gathering food. And there's a lot of data that supports that, that families that historically, you know, had a grandmother had more children. Right? And the more children you have, the more your genetics are going to get passed along. So, you know, grandmothers were a vital component of society. They spent an incredible amount of time gathering food. And in some situations, they provided the bulk of the calories for the family unit. We need more stories about the strength of women in menopause and the strength of everybody in menopause.
Nomi Shadi, I'm going to come to you first. When someone is seeking guidance from a healthcare provider about this, what are some questions they should kind of have top of mind to assess, like, is this the medical provider relationship that's going to work for me?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think this is a great question because one of the things I try to express to folk is if you are not satisfied with the care you're receiving from your doctor and you have the ability to select another doctor, you should do that. You're not stuck or wedded to this person. So when you go in and you might be experiencing some symptoms, I think it's important for your provider to be curious about all of who you are, right? Your identities, the way that you identify yourself, what your experiences are, and to give you the space and time you need. There's a lot of space you can take up in 15 minutes, actually, to have a deep conversation around what you're experiencing it. Is this unique to me? Is this inside of the norm? Should I be concerned? What are my options? What are my options for care? And do you have a moment to process this with me? And if they say something you don't understand, you can also say, I don't understand that. I need to ask you a question. Can you make time for this question? Or can we return to this question? So to feel like you're being rushed around your care is not what we want at all for anybody. So certainly figuring out the ways that you can dive into the space that you are given. And if the space that you are given with the provider you have doesn't work for you and you can make a transition to another provider, I suggest you do that.
Dr. Gunter, are there things we can do preemptively to, I guess, better prepare our bodies for this transition?
Well, getting quality information is probably the best way to prepare. And if you don't know, obviously, I hope my book is a source of that for a lot of people. The North American Menopause Society has a lot of great information on their website, and so that's a good place to start a search. As for preparing yourself, the single best thing that, you know, if you could only pick one thing to do besides getting quality information, I would say is exercise. Mm-hmm. So there is so much data to show specifically that weight-bearing exercise and resistance training is incredibly protective for your bones, for your muscles. That's the one thing that will keep people healthy and is associated with a reduced risk of all of the medical conditions that that increase with menopause. So if people are looking for like one thing to do, that would be the one thing besides getting informed.
Let's hear from one more listener. This is Timothy.
I know I'm a guy, but I have a wife and she is going through perimenopause. There's not a lot of talk about any of this with guys. You need to hear more from your beloved to know what's going on, and communication is key. It took a while before my wife could even figure out what was going on. I recommend a lot of communication when this starts.
Jessica, in your reporting, what did you hear from the people you interviewed about how someone can support them?
I think being open to the symptoms and hearing about the symptoms and just being sympathetic is the biggest thing you can do, not being not dismissive of what they might be going through, and keeping the bedroom very cold.
Let me tell you something. I spent most of last night alternating between freezing and sweating. That is the truth. Omi Shade, what about from you?
You know, I would say, well, one, thank you for the question, Timothy. Like, that's really important. And I think that we think about partnerships in a lot of different ways. So it's important for your partner to be curious, for your kids to be curious, for your friends to be curious, and for there to be open conversations around what I'm experiencing that might be related to menopause and what I'm experiencing as it relates to aging. You know, it's not over, y'all. There is good sex after 50. So I just want to encourage you all to know that, too.
Dr. Gunter, I'll give you the last word here. And also from that vantage point of what medical providers can do to best support us through this transition.
Well, I think medical providers need to be curious themselves and to listen to their patients, and they need to meet them where they are. And I think we need more research. And I just also like to echo that, yes, there is great sex after menopause. So, you know, yeah. This isn't the end. It's just another track of life.
That's Dr. Jen Gunter, an OBGYN and author of the book, The Menopause Manifesto. Omi Shade Bernie Scott is the host of the podcast, Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause. And Jessica Gross writes about parenting for The New York Times. I can't tell you how grateful I am for this conversation. Hopefully we can all do it again. Today's producer was Jonquilyn Hill, and thanks for all of your questions and comments. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A.